The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast, part of the Cincy Jungle Podcast Network, all, of course, under the SB Nation podcast umbrella. I'm Anthony Cazenza, joined by John Sheeran, and we, John Sheeran, will be joined by a very special guest tonight, Mr. Tim McGee. It's been almost a year to the day since he's been back on our program, I believe, and a lot of things have gone on since his last appearance. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. I mean, last time we had him on, he was talking about his favorite play. I still have it written down in my notes. I might bring it up or not. But for everyone out there who doesn't remember, it's flip right, two receivers on one side, Eddie Brown in a tight split. Tim goes deep. Eddie goes on a Z over route. I might ask him about that to see if it's still his favorite play.
I love it. I love it. And also, he had a little bit of shade for Jonah Williams last time he was on the show.
That's
there
right
here. And we got to ask him about that. Got to ask him about the Hubbard play, all kinds of stuff. Excited to be joined by him probably in about 10 minutes or so. We'll be joined by him. But in the meantime, John Sheeran, we need to talk about the health and other things going on with the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, they're missing a lot of key guys, but they've also, you know, as it went towards the end of the regular season, they got a lot of guys back, right? So it's kind of like a little bit of a yin and yang thing here. But before we kind of tee up Tim McGee and get all other kinds of different things that we're going to talk about, tee us up a little bit on the status of things.
Yeah, so in case you don't know, the Bengals will 99.99% be out in terms of percentage-wise. They will be out both right guard Alex Kappa and Jonah Williams at left tackle for this game. Neither one has practiced this week. You saw Jonah Williams, I believe, walking around kind of gingerly, but that's considerable progress considering there was a bad knee dislocation 4 days ago. Alex Kappa is still in a walking boot. I guess that's an upgrade from the scooter that he had pretty soon after he suffered his ankle injury. Neither guy is practicing. Neither guy will play. They are listed on the injury report. The only other player who did not practice for the Bengals so far this week, it's kind of interesting, it's Trey Flowers, who's been dressed for practice each of these days. He's been on the field, I think, doing work on the side or at least some form of drill work with some coaches or the training staff, but he's listed as DNP for both Wednesday and Thursday. So I'm kind of interested to see what his designation is going to be. It might just be a game time decision, questionable, to see if he can work through this hamstring injury. If he's not good enough to practice, then that kind of leads me to believe that he probably isn't going to be good enough to play. But the fact that he is dressing and he has been dressing for practices and he's kind of with the team and whatever the case may be, like, it kind of leaves me on the fence a little bit.
Yeah, and then, you know, you've got Osai with a shoulder issue, full practice both days this week. Eli Apple, neck issue, full practice both days this week. But, yeah, the Kappa and Jonah, the big ones on there, especially given the did not practice designation there. Trey Flowers, a guy who was such a nice pickup last year, obviously a great re-signing this year, but just hasn't had quite the same impact as he did down the stretch last year guarding so many tight ends. But still a valuable guy and a guy they will need to have on deck here, as a lot of players have been banged up here for the Bengals. And then you see here on the Bills side of things, Dane Jackson, the corner, went limited Wednesday, full Thursday. Daquan Jones, the defensive end, limited both days. Cam Lewis, the cornerback, full practice. Isaiah McKenzie has the hamstring issue, full practice both days. Poyer, a guy who was also on the injury report, John, the last two, the last time these two teams met, and ended up, I believe he suited up for that game, if I remember correctly. So he was limited on Wednesday and then did not practice Thursday. So a little bit of a backslide there.
Yeah, he was a game time decision for that canceled Monday Night Football game, and he ended up playing. I think they're just kind of managing him right now. They're giving him a rest day in the middle of the week. Again, tomorrow's going to be walkthrough, so there's not going to be much, you know, strain on these guys during these final practices. What's notable to me is you have two defensive tackles in Jordan Phillips and Daquan Jones are kind of dealing with some stuff right now. They've both been limited this week. They both might be game time decisions. If not, that's a issue for depth when you're talking about up the middle for the Bills defense. They still have Ed Oliver, who's really coming into his own as a fourth year guy at defensive tackle, but Daquan Jones has been really under the radar, a good pass rusher for the Bills defense. And you're talking about a Bengals offensive line that, again, is going to have a new configuration there. You know, they like to stunt, they like to twist, and, you know, they're not necessarily a powerhouse unit, but Daquan is still a decent player, and if he's not 100%, that's a factor.
It is a factor. Now, John, there is a little bit of another, I don't know if you want to call it a talking point. I don't know what you want to make of this thing. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of folks have kind of, I don't know. They're very defensive this week. Both fan bases, both teams are very defensive this week. They feel like they're being slighted. They feel like they're the ones not getting the respect and all of that. Part of what got that snowball rolling down the hill, so to speak, for the Cincinnati Bengals and their fan base was the NFL making an announcement, or at least making public that, giving a friendly nudge to the Chiefs and the Bills saying, hey, time to get those tickets on sale for a potential AFC championship game at the neutral site. Now, initially I was like, what did we? And then when you look at the ticket prices, you go, okay, there's something weird going on here, because the disparity between a potential Bengals and whomever is a matchup is way less than a Chiefs Bills ones that hit, you know, Ticketmaster and StubHub and all the major ones there. The other thing is I think that, if you take a step back, this is just me, you may disagree. If you take a step back from it, I don't think it's so much a, hey, this is the game we're planning on. It's more like, hey, usually you guys have this all dialed in because it's going to be at one of your venues. It's not at your venue. So we're just kind of making sure that you're on top of this, because this isn't business as usual if it's a neutral site type of thing. That was my take on it. I'm sure other people are up in arms about it.
Well, there was no announcement for any of the other three pre-sale options here. Like, there's a pre-sale going on for an AFC Championship game at Paycor Stadium should the Jaguars beat the Chiefs on Saturday afternoon. Like, that's a thing. Like, I don't think any Kansas City Chiefs players or fans are up in arms about the disrespect there. The only disparity here, like you said, is the price, right? It's four times the prices for the other three.
That's the thing that stuck out. Yeah.
Which I guess is the case for just a neutral site. Like, the NFL wants to take advantage of the spectacle, the potential spectacle that could be with the top two seeds in the AFC playing in, I don't want to say a Super Bowl type atmosphere, but where else are you going to get a neutral site aside from the very last game of the NFL season? Like, there's obviously hype with this potential matchup because of how epic that playoff game was, like, almost exactly a year ago to the day this year. So yeah, like, you can put on your tinfoil hats and the conspiracy, but like, this happens is pretty regularly. They announce these pre-sale options. The only thing here is that if the prices are this much, like, I don't think the NFL would hate the fact that this matchup is possible. You know,
I don't think they would hate the fact that the matchup is possible. Now, here's a question for you. What do you think that they would just be, the league that is, be uber disappointed in, say, something that maybe looks far out of the realm of possibility, which is the Bengals hosting the Jaguars? Do you think they would be upset about it? Because here's the thing. You look at the potential matchups. If it is, let's just say it's Jaguars-Bengals, right? You have Trevor Lawrence and you have Joe Burrow, and the storyline there, two number back-to-back number one overall picks, who, oh, by the way, went head-to-head against each other in the big college football championship a few years ago. I mean, there's a nice storyline there and two top picks there. Obviously, all the things that are involved in the Bills-Chiefs storylines, given the playoff game last year. But then, John, there's the whole deal also about this budding rivalry between the Bengals and the Chiefs, too. So, while we want to think that, you know, the NFL did the Bengals dirty in a lot of different ways, and there's some smoke signals that point to potentially some things that aren't on the up and up, I still kind of feel like I don't know that there's much of a rig job here, because there are so many other potential matchups that would make the league happy because of star players involved in the games.
Notice how you didn't say Bills Jags. There's no storyline for that. So if the Jags,
I guess Alan. Yeah.
If the Jags beat the Chiefs, then you can bet the Bengals are beating the Bills. The NFL will make sure of that.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I left that one out for sure. I guess that was the one. There's so many possibilities, and you just forget it. But I mean that one too, though. Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence, the big quarterbacks, big arms.
No one's watching that.
I guess not. I don't know. So we're getting set to be joined by Tim McGee in a couple minutes here. Michaela Garfield, YouTube subscriber. Michaela Garfield, what is up, Houday? And you can be a member of our YouTube channel, like Michaela. Get shout out, special stuff, swag, all kinds of stuff. Michaela's the best. We appreciate you. John, before we get Tim McGee on, obviously we're going to ask him a lot of stuff, and then we're going to break down some stuff after we talk to him. What else do we need to get to news and notes wise?
Well, I was going to bring up just Joe Mixon's reaction to the whole pre-sale thing. And I feel like this is just, it just kind of confirms the fact that the Bengals are the personification of Michael Jordan in The Last Dance. Like, they will weaponize anything that they take personally, because like, this is just something that's just trained in their minds at this point. Like, they've just dealt with this for the past 2 years now. And we've talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like, how long can you sustain just being the underdog and just constantly feeding yourself everything that you can get your hands on to motivate you? Obviously, it's worked out for Tom Brady. He's lasted 2 decades with a chip on his shoulder that's only grown and grown. It probably continues to grow after this season. But Joe Mixon was quoted by saying, like, it's disrespectful, but we're not worried about that expletive. It's just normal for these guys to just absorb whatever is being pumped out. Like, you have freaking Eric Weddle now, who's saying the Bengals have no chance on Kay Adams' show. Like, I'm sure that's being fed into the locker room at this point. There's a lot of things that every team and every player can kind of gauge with being the underdog, and you know, it just continues.
Yeah, I mean, not no chance, John. Zero chance.
Zero chance.
Zero chance. Yeah, and you know, I was gonna put something out like this as a response to that, but you know, whatever. Right. You see that and you go, man, this team gets doubted. And how often do the people who doubt them and openly doubt them have some egg on their face? Right. I mean, it's like, man, I don't really understand why you keep going back to the well of doubting Joe Burrow, doubting Zach Taylor, doubting this team. Look, I mean, in these biggest games, the last two seasons, this team is 4-1 and they've won. What are they on, 9 straight now? So including this last win, I mean, I don't really understand the open, just doubting, and why that's such a en vogue thing for people to continue to not believe that this Bengals team is going to make some noise in the postseason.
I have a theory, like, say in a very twisted, demented alternative reality, Joe Burrow ends up on the Browns. Right. And he turns around.
Where are we going? Where are we going?
So he turns around that franchise. Right. He does everything that he does with the Bengals. Right.
OK. And
now the Browns are the new darling. Right. I'm sure Bengals fans would try to discredit and be salty about the Browns being relevant and winning playoff games and going to a Super Bowl and being in the headlines. Like the Ravens, their current and former players. Now you have Bart Scott, you have Eric Weddle, who, by the way, only spent a couple of years with the Ravens. Like, he's not a career Raven. He's a career Charger. He should be mad about the Chargers blowing a 28-point lead. There's just this weird new dynamic of getting adjusted to the Bengals being good because they are legit and they're good. And I don't think people can compose themselves correctly because of it.
I want to ask this again, because we've talked about this a couple of times leading up to the Ravens game. And obviously we had a really cool chat with Daniel Wilcox, former Ravens tight end and whatnot. But it kind of centered around this topic of like, the Bills are a tough draw. They're a tough team. Their quarterback is excellent. We know all of that. Obviously the Chiefs, the same deal. But when you look at the Bengals' track record of success of late against Kansas City, what we maybe saw a glimpse of on Monday night, and the history between the Bengals and familiarity between the Bengals and the Ravens, could you make a suitable argument that the Baltimore Ravens draw, even at home, would be the toughest, or in contention with the toughest between those two, even though it was an opening round team?
I think so, just because of how well Baltimore knows them and how just stout and complete that defense is. And the fact that, I mean, Jesse Bates was pretty vocal this week about being excited to not play a triple option offense anymore. And I feel like that resonates with the entire defense of how you have to change everything in your preparation. You have 30 other potential opponents who, they don't run the same offenses, but like, this offense is very unique. It's very special. It's designed around specific talents, and that just changes your preparation. It changes your film study. It changes your practice, and it changes how you manage yourself throughout the game with just dealing with new things that you don't have to deal with other teams. And it's kind of it's a nuisance. It's annoying, right? And you have to deal with that twice in an 8-day span, and it's always tough to play the same team twice. The Bengals haven't had the greatest success in doing so in recent years. Like, we look back to the Jets in that playoff game when they rested their starters and they got blown up by 37, and then they came out flat against Mark Sanchez and Darrell Revis. So regardless if Tyler Huntley wasn't this world beater quarterback, he still played well. And the Ravens, again, have a really good defense that understands what the Bengals like to do well. It was always going to be a tough matchup.
So we're waiting to hear from Tim McGee here. Hopefully we'll be joined by him in a couple minutes. And I know you've got some stuff on the offensive line. Maybe we'll get to that first while we wait for him. But before we do, when you look at the Ravens, I think, you know, there's some, what was their offensive coordinator, Roman, left, left willingly with a year left on his contract here, a mutual parting of the ways, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. But what is this team, if you're looking at it from the Bengals lens, looking into the Ravens, what does this team need to do now? They've got a stud linebacker in Roquan Smith. Obviously, the defensive pieces are there. They have a stout running game. Who knows what that's going to look like now that their offensive line is gone, their offensive coordinator is gone. Is it just a matter of, hey, get some more passing weapons, make sure Lamar's healthy? I mean, what does this team need to do in order to, you know, kind of, they keep getting bounced out of the playoffs or just missing the playoffs, even though they've got a good head coach and a talented roster? I don't know, from your standpoint, what would you, I'm kind of saying you got to get some receiving weapons. I know that's not the focal point of how they run their offense, but they need a viable threat somewhere there. The guy, and that's kind of my take.
Commit to Lamar. Like, just do it at this point. Like, what is your alternative? Are you going to do the draft? Are you going to draft another quarterback? Are you going to try to, you know, persuade Aaron Rodgers to come there? Like, commit to Lamar. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's a better thrower than people give him credit for. Put him in an actual real offense like he was in Louisville and watch him thrive. He's got years of development under his belt. He's a very talented quarterback. He should be in the process of deciding who the next offense coordinator is. Commit to him. Like, don't worry about these injury issues. Don't worry about some of these just archaic, you know, criticisms of him as a thrower or anything like that. Commit to him. Get that foundation settled and then go from there. Obviously, you want better receiving talent around Lamar. You still want to utilize Mark Andrews and your tight ends and everything like that. You still want to utilize his strength as a runner, but like, just make him just put him in a real offense, man. Enough with this, just messing with, you know, his athleticism, everything like that. Just commit to him fully.
Yeah. Well, let's, while we're waiting for Tim McGee to join us, former Bengals wide receiver, played in the Super Bowl with the team and then iconic 1988 team. And then, of course, you can hear him on the radio for all kinds of pregame and postgame coverage on the radio covering the Cincinnati Bengals. John, you had some stuff on Jackson Carmen you wanted to share with us. And as we talked about, you know, all the injuries on the offensive line, and, you know, there's now questions based on last week, let up a sack, but he had some good moments, did Jackson Carmen, in relief of Jonah Williams. There was talk, you know, do you move Adeniji over to the left and bring in Prince back to the right and just keep Carmen on the bench? Carmen is a left tackle. Do you keep him there like he played at Clemson in college? Just kind of what you saw from him in this one against the Ravens as he came in relief for Jonah Williams.
Well, I wanted to look back at how he did in this game against the Ravens, and I isolated a handful of clips that you're seeing on YouTube. If you're listening on an audio platform, just go to the 18-minute mark or whatever on the actual YouTube video, and you can see some of these clips. the post on Twitter, and honestly, my biggest takeaway was his feet are a lot lighter than I remember him being at guard. Like athleticism and just explosion out of his stance wasn't really his strong suit in his first couple of years with the Bengals, but I'm seeing, you know, pretty decent footwork for a left tackle, albeit Tyus Bowser and OA aren't the greatest edge rushers in the world. They don't really have that much speed around the edge, but this is, I think, the one sack that he allowed, and he stopped his feet, and I think Tyus Bowser was kind of setting him up for that. But, like, that was my biggest takeaway with watching Carmen, you know, watching him from, like, these angles instead of just being in the stadium and not really noticing him. So, like, that was my takeaway, and when I posted this, I kind of started seeing a lot of conversations about, oh, what if this is the chance where Jackson Carmen kind of redeems himself and he becomes from a draft bust to a potential option left tackle beyond Jonah Williams? And it's like everything's just started getting way out of proportion when I'm just trying to isolate, you know, like a single trait that I noticed was improved compared to the last time that we saw Jackson Carmen. And it's just been a weird year, man, because obviously everything that happened in April with the report of what happened in Clemson, I didn't really even know how to address this because he's now back in the spotlight after we kind of just wrote him off, right? He lost the competition at left guard. He's been a healthy scratch for the vast majority of the season. We just haven't heard of him. He's been on the scout team. He's been really just putting his head, you know, nose to the grindstone to kind of work on his craft. And it looks like a lot of it has been paying off. So, like, Anthony, when we talk about consistency for an offensive lineman, can you expect that from Jackson Carmen now in this potentially a three-game span where he's at the most important offensive line position on the group?
Well, consistency since he's been with the Bengals has not been the strong suit. You know, we've talked about this where there's just this wild swinging of the pendulum in terms of inconsistency and whatnot. So what I saw, this was some of the best. I mean, granted, it was limited in terms of the amount of snaps and stuff, but this was some of the best tape in a game that I've seen from him. From what I kind of went back and watched. Now, granted, there was the sack given up where he just kind of got beat. There's times where he gets kind of pushed back a little bit, but he kind of replants and reasserts himself, which is nice. The light foot, the kind of lighter feet, lighter footwork, that sort of thing. Do you attribute that just to, you know, another year in the NFL, more coaching, et cetera, or do you attribute that more to that back? Because remember, he had that surgery on his back going into the draft. And so that may have hindered him. From what I can tell, maybe slim down a tiny bit as well. So do you attribute anything to the surgery thing, or do you think that this is just, you know, kind of growth as a player in his, you know, second year with the team?
I suppose there's comfortability just being back at a position that he played in at high school and in college, and like that footwork, I think he equated it to just, you know, getting back on the bike, right? It's just you don't really forget if you have a familiarity in everything that comes with that at playing that position, then the footwork I think is more natural compared to just doing these jump sets out of either guard spot, right, where you kind of get beat initially if your hands aren't great. But I think you saw, like, one of his positives coming out of Clemson was like the hand usage that he had, just working with his hands independently, where it wasn't these two-handed punches, it was landing in different strike zones and just having this reserve power that just was just throughout his body, right? He just had this strength that couldn't really be matched by a bunch of other edge rushers that he faced at Clemson. And you combined that footwork that he spent years kind of honing into with those hand usages, and you got a player that didn't really get beat that much by Chase Young in a college football playoff game. So I think being back at this position and being practicing there, more importantly, like, he's practiced at basically all four spots because that's what you do when you're a third string offensive lineman in the NFL, right? So just getting those reps in throughout the year, being healthy, like you said, that definitely makes a difference as well. I'm not really sure about his weight, but I think the fact that he's back at a position that he's familiar with, that makes the footwork a lot better, and I think everything is starting to click again. But again, he's still not proven at all as an NFL starter. He's back at a position that he doesn't have a ton of NFL experience at, so it's still, you know, finding his way back at the spot, even though he has a history with it. And I just worry about a week-to-week thing, right? It's the same thing with Max Sharpening. Like, he didn't have the greatest game against the Ravens, but I don't see him as a player who's going to continually struggle. Like, these guys who are just in this tier of quality when you're starting them, like, you'll get mixed results from a week-to-week basis. You're seeing it this year with Cordell Volson, even though for the most part, the macro view of him is that he's a decent player. Like, he's had some rough weeks just like he's had some good weeks. And I feel like that's what you're going to get with both sharpening. You can throw in Hakeem Adeniji into the equation and Jackson Carman. That's just the reality that the Bengals have on the offensive line right now.
So while we continue to, we're waiting to hear from Tim McGee to see if he's going to be coming on here. We're planning on him coming on to talk about this matchup. But while we wait for him, John, let's continue to talk about some of the offensive line, you know, matchups, key things, and all of that. So obviously this Bills team doesn't have Von Miller anymore, out for the year with an injury, but they do have, as you mentioned, Evans, the emerging edge player, and of course Rousseau, a young player who's also doing some things there. When you look at Carman going up against some of those players, what do you think? I mean, can he hold up? Was some of his success this last week because of limited snaps, we didn't have a full game sample size to go with? Or is this a guy that you're like, hey, you know, he can maybe keep this afloat here against a team that, a Buffalo defense that's pretty good, but definitely not as good as the Ravens defense, I guess, from top to bottom?
Yeah, I really don't know, to be honest. Like, I think people are getting a little carried away with saying, oh, the Bills pass rush is not exactly their strong suit, right? It's not a dominating unit. They don't have a dominant player since Von Miller has been injured. Well, that's all relative to the competition, right? If you have a subpar pass rush against an average offensive line, going up against an offensive line that its current iteration is objectively below average, right? It's just a lot of pieces being thrown together at this point with not a lot of proven players at each position. You're going to get wins from the Bills pass rush. You have Shaq Lawson coming off the right edge. You have Greg Rousseau coming off the left edge. So both guys are more of power rushers. They don't really have a ton of speed to be had around the edge. Power against Hakeem Adeniji in the form of Greg Rousseau, that kind of concerns me because Adeniji isn't really that great up against power rushers, and he's susceptible to inside counters along the inside. Ed Oliver is a burst of energy at three technique. Daquan Jones, we already talked about him. He's a pretty good complement to him. You have Ted Karras essentially as your only high quality interior lineman, and centers don't really get tested that much in pass protection. I think it's the most equal matchup of the game because, again, neither unit is that strong, but when you have equality in the trenches, you typically like to lean towards the defensive line. And the same kind of applies to the opposite side of the ball, right? When the Bengals are rushing Josh Allen, like I feel like that's a definite advantage for the Bengals against the Bills offensive line, who, again, is not a very good unit. Spencer Brown and Deion Dawkins, they're not very good against speed. That's right up of Trey Hendrickson's wheelhouse. Sam Hubbard has gotten a lot better of rushing out the edge. But again, going back to the Bengals offensive line, it's kind of weakness versus weakness. And again, like, I think when all things are considered, the Bills will have opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, there's some other names on the roster as well. Shaq Lawson, AJ Epenesa, some guys that have contributed to the pass rush game for Buffalo this year. And it's definitely going to be that's the point in the area wherein a guy like Eric Weddle comes on the air and says the Bengals, quote unquote, have zero chance because of the offensive line issues and attrition, injuries up front. And so we look at this game, John. Is that where you see this game being won or lost overall, or do you see it be more of a situation? Because look, the Bills defense, while it's got some talented names kind of scattered throughout most of its unit, they're giving up points, they're giving up yards, they're giving up games that they're making games a lot closer, especially when you have kind of a high powered offense. And there seems to be a weakness in their unit, maybe where it's the middle of the field, the intermediate passing game, you know, their linebackers maybe aren't the strongest in coverage, et cetera, et cetera. So might this be the week where, you know, again, everybody's saying Burrow in that offensive line, but can they counteract that with the quick hitters to Boyd, to Higgins across the middle, and that's going to be the cure-all? Or is this just going to be, you know, 5-6 sack game that's going to not be really fun to watch from an offensive perspective?
Well, I don't think Burrow gets sacked 5 or 6 times in this one. He might get sacked at like an anvil, right? And that just comes to the territory of having Joe Burrow. And, you know, sometimes he'll extend plays and sometimes he'll just end up eating 1 or 2. And undoubtedly, you're going to have offensive linemen in this game getting beat. And it's just a matter of Burrow getting the ball out quickly or evading them, extending the plays, getting out of the pocket. The biggest thing for me, though, is like I go back to what Joe Mixon said about the Bills linebackers and the fact that, oh, they're not the Ravens. Well, Matt Milano is like an all-pro. Tremaine Edmonds, I don't think I'm saying his name right, is a phenomenal athlete at linebacker. Like, these guys click and close very fast. And you're talking mm-hmm. about an offense that has gotten so accustomed to sending your receivers vertical because you have defenses that are just living in Tampa too. And Joe Burrow has gotten so quick and aggressive and just targeting Joe Mixon out of the backfield as a check down. Well, now you're going up against linebackers who aren't going to give up that much space. Or when they do give up space, they're going to come downhill very quickly and they're going to force Mixon to make a miss. It hasn't always been Mixon's strong suit with the ball in his hand. So instead of having like 7 or 8 yards and some of these checkdowns to Mixon against some of these soft coverages, you might only get 3 or 4 or 5, right? And that leads to potentially longer third downs. It puts more stress on the Bengals' third down unit, which again is right up there with the Chiefs and the Bills in terms of effectiveness, despite not always being, you know, third and manageable. Like, they've lived on converting third downs this year, and that's what the good teams have to do. But the really good teams, they also convert on first and second down, and that's going to be another key for the Bengals. Like, they can stretch the Bills' defense a little bit better than they could with the Ravens, even though they had some minimal success against the Ravens in terms of generating explosive plays. It's going to come down to T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase winning on the outside. You still have a backup safety playing for the Bills and for Micah Hyde, who's not going to come back in this game. I think there's going to be a lot of tension on Ja'Marr Chase. They're going to try to bracket him with Jordan Poyer. They might put Tre'Davious White on him. They might put Kyir Elam on him, who's got really long arms. Maybe they save Elam for T. Higgins because he's kind of more of this of the equal size matchup. But how they handle like generating, you know, yards underneath some of these coverages against those linebackers who do really good, who do a really good job of getting downhill quickly, that might be the key to this game.
Last week against the Ravens, Joe Mixon, you know, there were a handful of occasions where on first down they gave him the ball and he was able to kind of scoot forward and get a decent gain on first down. And I think that's going to be another big key this week for the team, that, you know, you can't get yourself in these third and longs like you just said. I mean, I that's just such a clutch situation. And it's even more so a dire need to get the big yards on first early downs, first downs, that sort of thing. Not necessarily via Mixon, but maybe using him. That would be nice to achieve that kind of balance. But they need to get good yards on early downs because it makes obviously makes conversions a lot easier. But also this time around, they're not at home. They're on the road, and it's going to be loud as hell there. And, you know, when you're facing maybe a third and two versus a third and seven, a third and eight deep in your own territory, the noise becomes a factor. And, oh, by the way, there's those three replacement offensive linemen in there. False starts can occur. That's when kind of things can snowball on you. Disaster can kind of strike. So that's where I think, like you mentioned, the early downs are super critical for the Bengals to get, you know, some positive momentum.
And then there's the other side of the ball, right? You have the Bengals defense going up against this moose of a quarterback in Josh Allen and this the most vertical offense that I've seen in recent years. And it's one of the questions that I would like to ask Tim if he ever does come on the program here. But I don't think, like, I think there's going to be a lot of attention regarding, like, how the Bengals stop Josh Allen, right, or at least try to contain him. But, Anthony, I found it interesting that, you know, the Bengals may not have liked to play the Ravens twice in a row, but I think there's value in playing quarterbacks like Anthony Brown and Tyler Huntley, who like to get out of the pocket, who do these play action rollouts, who throw on the run outside of the pocket, and also who have these designed runs. I think there's value in experience with that before you end up playing Josh Allen. Because I went through the Dolphins Bills tape, and there are identical plays of these design runs for Allen, or just times where he's escaping the pocket, and either you have this four-man rush who's trying to contain him in the pocket, and you have defensive tackles shedding blocks, finding him and tracking him down, or you have either a strong safety or a linebacker spying him over the middle of the field, and you have more aggression out of your pass rushers because you know you have help in the second level. And there were just multiple identical examples between the Bengals defense and the Dolphins defense handling each respective quarterback, and Josh Allen's going to give you opportunities. Like, I don't think, like, it's the key of the game, because we just know what to expect with Allen at this point. He's going to try to burn the Bengals deep. He was absolutely going to try to throw over the heads of Von Bell, Jesse Bates, Eli Apple, all those guys. And they're obviously going to be more conservative in their coverage because of that. But Allen's going to get out of the pocket. He's going to be reckless with the ball. That's not been trained out of him. And he's going to put the ball on the ground at least once. He's going to put the ball in harm's way a couple of times when he's throwing the ball. Like, that's just going to happen, and it's up to the Bengals defense continuing to be this clutch Hydra unit. You know, when one guy goes down, another guy steps in, and there's just no drop-off, right? Those opportunities exist, and I feel like they've never been in a more better state in terms of preparation to face him.
I mean, you took the words out of my mouth a little bit. Josh Allen's going to give you opportunities to either, you know, create game-changing plays, you know, or just give it up there. Now, there's going to be the throws, the frozen ropes that are 40, 50 yards down the field, the big bombs, what have you. So those will be there, too. There's going to be some frustrating moments, I think, in this one if you're, you know, wanting the Bengals defense to really clamp down on things. He's just too talented and too good. His arm's too good. His mobility's too good. But there is the carelessness aspect, I guess, with the football. I mean, you mentioned the turnovers and potential turnovers last week against Miami. And I think that's where this team, this Bengals team, can really get to be opportunistic in this one and not only keep this close, but maybe even if there's enough opportunities and they seize them, that they will be able to, you know, come out of this one with a win. And here's the thing that I've noticed too. And there's a viral video out there from Dan Orlovsky a few weeks ago from ESPN talking about Burrow in the pocket and his ability, even with the, I think it was the finale against the Ravens when he was breaking down some things, and Burrow in the pocket and his ability and knowing that to get that second hand on the football as he's maneuvering in the pocket while also dancing around defenders. And that's to obviously protect the football, avoid a fumble in case there's a rogue arm that comes in there to smack the ball out. It seems that Josh Allen, in doing all of these things, sometimes doesn't have that same, sixth sense, so to speak, to get that other hand in there when the pocket's kind of crumbling around him. And granted, we've seen him do it a number of times where he gets out of these situations where you go, what? And obviously makes big throws, big runs, that sort of thing. But we've also seen the opposite happen.
Yeah. Like, again, like that's just who he is at this point. Like, he trusts his athleticism. He trusts his strength so much, almost to a fault, where like these bad plays do happen. And the Bills have just learned to accept it because you just have this surplus of explosive plays and plays that you just don't get with 99% of other quarterbacks. He's one of one in the sense where you have to play 11 on 11, but you also have to cover, you know, the 70 yards behind you because he can throw it that far very effortlessly. And then it comes down to, you know, like the coverages and the type of defenses that you have to run. And I don't think the analysis is any different than what we talked about a few weeks ago when they came to Cincinnati. Like, he doesn't do that well against the blitz. Teams aren't really that afraid of going man up on him in certain spots, but Stephon Diggs still exists, Gabe Davis still exists, and that arm still exists. So if Allen does get the ball out before your guys arrive, like, they have the receiving talent to create separation against man coverage and to beat you over the top. Like, the Dolphins came out aggressively as hell in that game, and they were playing cover one, cover three, cover zero at times. Like, that was the call on, like, a third and 15 when Josh Allen, like, threw the ball 50 yards to Gabe Davis or Stephon Diggs down the field that led to the game's first touchdown. So you have to be careful about when you make those calls. But there is some data to support the fact that if you blitz Josh Allen, you get him under pressure, that's when the mistakes start. And also, you know, if you get speed around the edge of him, when he steps up, his eyes don't really drop, but he just starts running without a plan. And I feel like there's like an innate trust in himself to make a positive play happen. And it's up to defenders to be aware of where he is and just close in on him. And that will lead to sacks and that will lead to bad plays that the Bengals can capitalize on.
Well, we're waiting to hear from Tim McGee here. He confirmed with us earlier today, and so hopefully we can get him on here before we start closing up to talk about this game here. I don't want to sound like the old school guy and, you know, ground and pound and all that kind of stuff, but with inclement weather, even with these quarterbacks, does the running game take, I kind of feel like the running game takes a bigger prominence this week than maybe a couple of weeks ago even, right? I mean, I know this is a showcase of quarterbacks and the wide receiver talent, the passing, all of that, but just with the weather and, you know, again, the other thing with it too, you know, I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to say this or that and the other thing, but We had another miss last week from Evan McPherson on an extra point. Cold weather, it's like kicking a cinder block. I don't know, man. I know the Bengals have struggled running the ball of late. Might this just be the type of game where either team really wants to try and establish that either by balance or just kind of to control the game because of the weather mostly?
Well, to the Bills' credit, they've been relying less on Josh Allen running the ball. Like, I think he only ran it twice or three times against the Dolphins. They have this now duo of running backs in Singletary and Cook that they like to implement. And I feel like the threat of Allen kind of makes that thing kind of go, just like the threat of Huntley or Jackson with the Ravens. So I think the Bills will try to run the ball a little bit. It's just with the Bengals now. Like, there's this narrative that the Bengals can beat you multiple ways, but right now they can't beat you running the ball. Like, they weren't terrible against the Ravens in this regard, but not in the sense that they could just give the ball to Joe Mixon 25 times and feel comfortable. Like, that obviously wasn't the case. Like, they couldn't run against the Ravens for 2 weeks straight. Now they're going up against the Bills defense that, again, is really sound in their keys. They have really good linebackers. They have Daquan Jones and Shaq Lawson, who can set the edge and get into the backfield a little bit. So it'll probably depend on how the game is going. Like, if you're Zach Taylor, if you're, you know, Brian Callahan, if you're Joe Burrow, and the Bills are having a day where they're creating explosive plays and they're putting points on the board, like, I don't think you can just lean back on Joe Mixon at that point. Like, the game is going to dictate itself based off of how it goes. And I don't even think that it's going to start off like giving it to Mixon. Like, if the game goes a different way and then they have control, like, I think that every team would love to just lean on their running back at this point. But I think the pressure of going up against a quarterback that can just break the game at any moment, if your defense hasn't made that play yet, which, again, not counting the Bengals out for making any clutch play on defense at the end of the game. But if Allen is having a decent day, I feel like there is going to be pressure to just put it all on Burrow.
Well, we usually go a handful of minutes more. We're going to probably have to, unfortunately, reschedule Tim McGee. We had some confirmation from him earlier, and I don't know what's going on there, but we'll see if we can sneak him in here at the end. I suppose I could probably dive off and call him if I wanted to on the air here, but at any rate, we'll see what we can do there. Predictions for this one, John. Obviously, we talked keys, we talked Jackson Carmen, we talked running game, we talked all kinds of different things. Keys for this one for you, and predictions, rather, for you in this one.
You have a quarterback who is guaranteed to give you at least one or two opportunities of turnovers. You have a defense that has this innate act of forcing turnovers at the right time. It feels like We're going to be expecting, like, that slip up from Allen, like, throughout the game, and he may put together like a perfect three quarters of football. But when the fourth quarter comes around, the Bengals haven't made that play. It almost feels like a guarantee at this point that a play is going to be made. I feel like the Bengals offense, I'm not leaning on that 9 minute period that they had against the Bills, saying like, oh, like, they're going to replicate that over a four quarter span. Like, the Bills defense is still a pretty solid unit, but I don't think they're as intimidating in the Bengals' eyes as the Ravens' defense is. I feel like that was the case entering Monday night. I feel like that's the case now. There's obviously the factor of going into a hostile environment with a new configuration offensive line and dealing with a silent count for the first time in a couple of weeks. It'll probably be a concern regardless if it was like the week one offensive line out there, but there is the fact that the Bengals haven't had a ton of pre-snap issues here. So that factor is taken into account for. I still think the Bengals' offense is going to put up a decent performance. The Bills are going to score. They're going to generate explosive plays. Let's just get that out of the way. Josh Allen is going to do Josh Allen things. Stephon Diggs is going to do Stephon Diggs things. And with that same confidence, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, they're going to do their usual thing too. So this game is going to be close. It's going to be a one-score game. I can definitely see a Bengals turnover at the end coming up again at the right moment. And again, one-score game. And I think when you even everything out and how the game is going to go, kind of see the Bengals kind of eking this one out at the end. So I'm going to go Bills 31, Bengals 30.
I hope people caught on. By the way, our member here, Michaela, said, did you catch this? I did not. Jake Liskow blasted you this week on the show. I assume that means Locked On Bengals. Did you see it?
Show? Does he have a podcast?
He does. He does. Yes.
I'll have to
he
listen
does.
To
he,
it.
He promoted it on our show at one point. Yeah. No, I did not check it out. We'll have to I don't know, get him on here, or you guys will have to tell us about it. You know, I've gone back and forth on this one in terms of how I feel about it, how what I think is going to happen. And yeah, I could kind of see this going either way. I saw the Monday night game going either way. You know, there are times where I'm like, you know, I'm going to do a prediction, and you know, I feel like I was going to just pick the Bills, just, you know, a road game, and this is where the road ends. But this team just keeps proving people wrong. It keeps proving doubters wrong. Last week, it looked pretty bleak, John, I feel like, at that moment when Tyler Huntley was going to reach that ball over the goal line, and kind of a miracle happened here. So I don't know. I kind of feel like how you put it, where I just feel like maybe the Bengals are just going to make that one extra play this week, because I do feel that the Bengals were pretty evenly matched against the Ravens in terms of talent. And I mean, there's, you know, their opposites are their strengths, right? You kind of felt like Bengals passing, Ravens rushing, Bengals offense, Ravens defense, you know, it just kind of goes back and forth. And so you feel like there's some evenness there. You feel like there's some evenness in this one between these two teams, and more similarities in terms of what they like to do, how they're built, and all kinds of different things. So I'm going to say 27-24 Bengals. That's going to be my prediction. 27-24. Not necessarily. And I could see 30 plus points each team, but maybe with the weather, I'm cutting that down a little bit. And again, I do not doubt that the Bills can definitely win this game, but I don't know, man. This team just keeps doing it. They just keep putting it together. Maybe this is the week they hit the buzzsaw. I don't know, that like everybody's predicting, but I can't doubt them until they give me a reason to.
You know what? Like, the Bills have everything going for them in terms of things that motivate them, right? They have, you know, DeMar Hamlin back in the facility. They've dealt with a lot this year. They dealt with a community that dealt with a lot of deaths in a snowstorm. They dealt with, like, the sickness of their owner. Like, it's been a crazy year for the Bills. And, like, it feels like just two teams that are just coming up here, like meeting each other again in almost this battle of destiny, right? The Bengals are on this revenge tour of trying to get back to where they were last year. So, you know, whoever wins, I feel like people can feel pretty good about the results. And I feel like there's going to be a lot of Bengals fans that are going to be rooting for the Bills if that is the case, if they end up going on. But I'll say this, though. If this game was a neutral site, we probably wouldn't get the chance of a snowstorm, or at least any snow, and that's always fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's one way to look at it. Well, unfortunately, not sure what happened to Tim, but John, if you've seen Tim McGee or listened to Tim McGee on our show, this hasn't been the first time where you know, it maybe gets postponed a week, and hopefully we'll be talking to him after Bengals win. So we'll try and get him on, I guess, next week, or maybe even tomorrow if he's willing and able for a special episode there. We'll try and see what's going on there. But at any rate, let's drop the mic and get out of here. What do you got for us?
Just a simple request. If you are making the brave trek to always sunny Buffalo this weekend, or however long that drive is for you, and you're tailgating, if you see anyone breaking tables, or if you yourself are breaking tables, please videotape it. I would love for nothing else. If the Bengals happen to lose on Sunday and we need stuff to talk about to make us feel good, we will play any video of Bengals fans breaking tables, or Bills fans breaking tables, or maybe both, in a camaraderie and a sense of community breaking the table together. So if you see any, please send it to us. We would love to show a montage.
What we will not share is the viral video of the poor Ravens fan who I think is an Ohio or Kentucky native. Let's just say he was wallowing in some of his own filth. That's the kind of stuff. That, knuckleheads in the stands, you know, throwing hands at each other. That's the kind of crap we're not going to share on this show. But if you are a Bengals fan, I think my guy, Drew Garrison's talking about jumping through tables and stuff. He's going to the game. So if you're a Bengals fan, whatever, shoot us those videos and whatnot. Again, sorry about the confusion with Tim McGee. We'll have to figure that out and reschedule him. He's always a good time to talk to. But you had John and I yammering on about the Bills, the Bengals, and all kinds of different things. Hopefully you enjoyed that this week. And I don't know, man, I guess my other thought is, a question for you. What do you think the atmosphere around, because of the DeMar Hamlin thing and because of the closeness of these two teams in a lot of different ways, what do you think the air around that stadium is going to be this weekend? Do you think it's going to be jovial? Do you think it's going to be really serious? Do you think it's going to be contentious in between these two teams too? You know, I mean, obviously there was chippiness the last couple of weeks between the Bengals and the Ravens, not quite the same rivalry here. Obviously everything that happened a few weeks ago. So I don't know. I don't really have a good answer. I'm trying to think of like what the atmosphere may be like here in Buffalo this week.
It's Buffalo, man. They always come prepared. And I think initially there's going to be not tension, but like, oh yeah, like we've played this team before a couple weeks ago and something really tragic happened. But I think seeing DeMar on the field, like I think that's what it's going to be. T. Higgins said that he wants to, you know, chop it up with him and connect with him in person for the first time, or the first time since he was in Cincinnati. I feel like just his presence there, seeing him be okay, I feel like it's going to make people feel a lot more comfortable about everything. And obviously just the good news with him being okay, I think is improved a lot of people's, you know, disposition with everything that's happened. So there might be some minor tension in the beginning, but you know, as soon as the chips are down and the game is well underway, like this will just be classic AFC playoffs.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to be a fun atmosphere, and I think it will be. And stay warm for those of you going to the game. It sounds like it's going to be a cold one with the snow, etc. Take care, everybody. This has been the Orange and Black Insider. And oh, by the way, you can get this show on our YouTube channel over by John. There is a show icon underneath the SB Nation logo. Click that as you watch the video. Subscribe, click the bell to be notified when we go live, when new content is available. Give a thumbs up on the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. And then, of course, you can subscribe to the Cincy Jungle podcast channel on your favorite audio streamer, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones. We are there. John, we'll be back. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a win in the next couple of days, my friend. Take care.
Yep. See you guys.